in Seattle, Seattle. And you need to buy yourself a home. We'll be right there for you, because we're the realtors that you can trust. So go to RodandConsidDow.com.
Don't go anywhere unless you want to. It's the Ron and Don Show, starring Ron and Don, and sometimes me, at ronanddon.com.
Hey, you guys, what's going on? Welcome to episode 722 now of the Ron and Don Show, and we are live in the Les Schwab Studios.
What's up, Ron and Don Nation?
Hey, coming up on the Ron and Don Show, the Supreme Court, yeah, they're taking on the homeless crisis. How about that? Also, the pros and cons of owning a landmark home in Seattle. I was in a landmark home in Seattle. And you know what that means? It means you can't tear it down. But it also means something else that might blow your mind. Can't wait to tell you about it. Before we get to that, though, let's get to this. Speaking of blowing your mind, everybody writes something, you post something, you hashtag something, and you're just hoping it gets viral. And typically, you get over 5,000 clicks. Man, you are viral. But Ron wrote something the other day about Dave Ramsey. Didn't even hashtag it Dave Ramsey. And Ron, you shared a graphic of me today. Over 1.1 million people have been exposed to what you wrote. First and foremost, I know on a previous podcast you talked about what you wrote. But just frame it up for us again. And I know I've seen you lurking in the comments and responding to people. What is the hot button after you frame up this story? So there's a double barrel question that you're not supposed to ask in radio, you guys. You're supposed to ask one question at a time.
I can't wrap my brain around 1.1 million people. Not that they've even read, showed up in their feed. I don't know if that means they read part of it, clicked on whatever they did. I don't know how the algorithms work. But I write dozens of posts about real estate. And so I saw a graphic from our friend Matthew Gardner, who's an economist. He's a real estate economist, and he seems extra smart because of a British accent. Yep. If you're an economist and you have a British accent, like, you seems like you can say no wrong.
Totally.
He created these graphics that basically said, what's the percentage of take-home pay that people have in Washington State? He broke it down by county. So it was a graphic of a map of Washington State, and then each county had a percent on it. And there was two graphs, or two charts. One chart was for all home buyers, and one chart was for first-time home buyers. And what's the percentage of your income? Mm-hmm. So I looked at this, and he didn't say anything about Dave Ramsey. I just had listened to Dave Ramsey in the past. And he's not the only person that advocates this, but he strongly advocates, Dave Ramsey does, if you listen to him on the radio, never, never, never spend more than 25% of your post-tax take-home pay on a mortgage, and you should always have a 15-year mortgage. So that's what he preaches.
And like the money guys believe that, Dave Ramsey believes that, a lot of people that are involved in the FIRE movement believe that, because they believe if you really attack your mortgage, and we should talk about the fact, and maybe your parents did this growing up, maybe they had a 30 and they paid it off in 15, and this is where people got the idea. It's like, when you make that first payment every month, you're paying a lot of the interest. But if you turn around and you double barrel it and you make a second payment during the month, a lot of that is aimed at the principal on the loan. Now, there's certain loans you can't do that on, and so you want to make sure that you can double barrel a loan. But think about it. If you could pay this thing off in 15 years rather than 30, you don't pay as much interest on the loan, and that's been the thought about paying a home off early. But think about this. He's from Nashville, Tennessee, right? I have relatives that live in Nashville, Tennessee. Even though that real estate has gone bonkers, it's not bonkers right now. And a bonkers piece of real estate in Nashville, Tennessee is a piece of real estate that is maybe worth $380,000, $400,000, $410,000, right? That's a lot different than if you're trying to buy a piece of real estate here in Seattle, Washington, where a starter home starts at $1.2 million.
So in theory, I don't disagree with him. I think if you can pull that off, I agree with him. That makes great financial sense. I just paid off my mortgage, and it's revolutionized my life. So I totally get.
And the other thing that he says with that, though, is only have a car that you can afford. You shouldn't have a car payment, right?
Don't have a credit card. Don't have a car payment.
Yeah, don't have all that stuff. And so it's not just about the home, but it's about getting to a point where you can use your home, or let's say instead of spending $800 or $1,000 a month on a Tesla, what if you took half that money and you put it in the S&P 500 and you let that ride from a very early age? By the time you're 40, 45, 50 years old, you're not relying on Social Security. And what he sees, because he does this national radio show all the time, and I listen to it. He always has people. I'm 62 years old. I'm still paying off my student loans. I own two cars. I'm $152,000. And you're blown away by the fact that people have got to the end of their earning life cycle, or at least what they perceive as their earning life cycle. And they are in so much debt. And they always call in and they're like, I'm ready to file for bankruptcy. He does everything that he can do to encourage people not to do so.
So my basic argument was this. Dave Ramsey doesn't live on the West Coast. If you are a home buyer in Washington State, what do you do? So what do you do if King County averages right now 41% and you want to be a home buyer? So I laid out three simple techniques that you and I talk about all the time, getting a partner, getting maybe a family member to give you a gift or manipulating your loan. And I also threw in there that you could possibly move. And so for whatever reason, this thing caught fire and it's up over 1.1 million clicks. A couple themes jumped out, and I want to get your take on this. Because I did this for a long time in my life. There's a bunch of the comments. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments on this post.
And most of them are from me.
Yeah, and most of them are from Don.
Hey, you jack wagon, you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
One of the big themes is...
Ron pays me to comment, and yeah. Actually, out of the 1.1 million clicks, 1 million of those are from me, Charlie the dog, and my son. We sit here every night and just click away. It's all about his ego, but he does pay us... $50 a night, and he sends us tacos from Taco Bell. So we're very appreciative.
One of the main themes that I've seen develop is I'm fill in the blank years old. I'm 62, and this is what I did to get my house. And so you have a bunch of people that want to spike the football
in the comments
and say, here's what I did. And the narrative that I think they're buying into...
That's legitimate, though. If you did something that worked, then...
No, I get that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I think the thing that is interesting to me to observe, because, again, I thought this way for a long time, is to not account for luck and also your station in life, where you are, for whatever reason, you were the type of person that knew how to buy real estate, had enough education to buy real estate, you were in a position to buy real estate, you had the financial support and maybe educational support to do so. And so and I did the same thing, where you discount who your family was, how much money you grew up with, what sort of stability you had, or whatever. And you want to minimize the luck and blame it all on your skill. Blame it all on your work ethic. And I think that you can be a hard worker.
Or your good looks. I blame a lot of my success on my good looks.
And I think I went through this reckoning when we were doing the over the last 10 years, talking about white privilege and all of those things, of going, just... the fact that I worked hard, or that I had, some things in my life that I'm proud of what I accomplished, doesn't mean that I also, as the cliche goes, doesn't also mean that I was born on third base and thought I hit a home run. It's like there's a lot of built-in things that have stacked the deck in my favor over my life. And so both those things can be true. So I think the thing that I wish happened more in the million people that have interacted with this post is to have some empathy and sympathy for people that are really trying to get real estate and trying to change the trajectory of their family's life. And I try to point out in a couple of these comments, it's like, hey, even if you just were a renter, if you're a renter in King County and you had a couple kids, your rent is probably $3,500 to $4,000. If you're living in the city of Seattle and around, if you wanted to get a single family house and be a renter,
it's more than that.
It can be 35.
Single family house?
probably $4,000, $5,000.
Oh man, so, $5,000 to $6,000 right now.
Yeah, so it's not like
$3,500. No way.
You know, I think these people in different parts of the country might go, "Oh well, what I did is I rented an apartment for $750 a month." You know, I did the beans and rice thing with Dave Ramsey and then, you know, was able to buy this house. And what I look at that and go, hey, if you're a family, a young family, and you are paying $4,000 a month in rent, let's figure out a way for you to be an owner, because the upside of that is so much greater. And yes, it's a bigger risk. And yes, you might have to put more than 25% of your take home pay in there temporarily. But that's, a lot of people were accusing me of going, oh, this guy's smoking meth and he just wants you to, you know, he just wants you to do a deal with him. And he's trying to, it's like, I commented a couple of times, like, yeah, I get paid when we do real estate transactions, but you know, I'm not going to coerce someone off of Facebook to buy a $750,000, $1 million house through a Facebook post. Like, that's just not a thing.
Yeah. Has anybody called you from the Dave Ramsey community wanted to purchase a home with you?
No, I have not had that, but I have messaged a couple people on there that have, you know, had some things. I said, hey, we will brainstorm with you and try to figure out a plan, because I think, and I think you would agree with me, there is not a better path for the average person in any state to change their financial future more than real estate.
And you don't have to do it alone. A lot of people just partner. I've seen women partner, three or four women get together and buy a four-bedroom house and chip away at it that way, right? And then you can build equity together, say, hang on to that, pull the equity out, and go do your own thing. So my son and I were sitting with one of my partners the other night, and we were having dinner, and he was explaining to my son what he did. He and his wife actually rented the rooms out of a house that they were renovating to other people when they had renovated them, because it was the only way to pay for the house that they were in. Now he owns 30 homes today. So he wasn't born with a silver spoon in his mouth. His mom passed away, I think, when he was four. His dad was an electrician. He grew up with lots of brothers, and he just kind of had to fight his way forward in life. So
He probably was using more than 25% of his take-home
pay.
Yeah,
you got to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. Every time my son and I go to the gym, we sit there and we plank and we talk about the uncomfortable things in our lives. And sometimes building wealth, when wealth hasn't been handed to you, it's an uncomfortable thing to do. So you don't get to drive. And this is where I agree with Dave Ramsey. I mean, if you're renting and you have mouths to feed and kids to take care of, and you're going out and you're, you know, driving around in a $1,500 a month truck, and you're not using that truck as a tool, you're using it as its ego and a status symbol, you're dumb shit. I mean, you just are. Because you could take half of that, right? You could go, you could go buy a car and generate even a 700. Owning a car is and making those kind of payments, especially with what insurance costs now and all that, is just so stupid. You should just take that money, even if you don't pursue and buy real estate, and all you do is put it in the S&P 500, as Warren Buffett says. It's boring. It's not fancy. But call me up in 30 years when I'm not around anymore, and thank me for what I just said. We will see you on the other side of this. It's Don here with my good friend Andy from Les Schwab. He's an Eastsider. We're not going to hold that against him. Andy, you guys are doing something cool. It's Food Awareness Month, the month of April. We're going to drive out hunger. We're working with Cairo 7, QFC, and Food Lifeline. You want people to head over to QFC, buy some food, and drop it off where?
We're taking those donations at all of our 83 Western Washington Les Schwab locations. You can do a monetary donation at QFC. But the biggest thing is we're collecting this food so that we can distribute it within our communities to help out the families in need in our areas.
Yeah. So don't forget, Cairo 7 Cares, our good friends at Food Lifeline, Les Schwab, and the Rondon Nation, we're all working together. You can donate your non-perishable food item at any of the 83 Western Washington Les Schwab Tire Centers. All food collected will be delivered to Food Lifeline to feed local families right here in our area. So join us, you guys. This is brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers, Cairo 7 Cares, and QFC. Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing what, Andy? The right thing since when?
1952.
You nailed it. All right, so this is how real estate works. I'm at a Seahawk game, and I'm watching the Seahawks win the Super Bowl, and I'm in my friend George's seat, and I'm sitting next to my friend Mike Martin. Known Mike now over a decade. He calls me the other day, says, "Hey, I got a tech friend. He's in Hawaii, owned a property in Green Lake. He's going to fix it up. He went to Hawaii." He said, "I'm never going home." So he's had this rental now for 10 years. His name is Jude. So Mike puts me in touch with Jude. Jude calls me and says, "Hey, I got to sell this house." I call Scotty. We go over the house, and this house has a foundation problem, has a roof problem, has lots of problems. And in order to fix this house and bring it to market, it's going to take about $100,000. And then the house is going to be worth about $925,000. Anyway, there's a builder that Jude knows that says, "Hey, well, I'll give you $835,000. And then there's a neighbor that says, "Hey, I'll give you $850,000. And then what I did is I got on the phone with one of my builder friends, because again, I don't like seeing homes torn down, but there's some that have to be torn down when they have bad foundations, right? And this is a home that has to come down. This builder said, "You know what? I'll pay $1,060,000 for that particular house." So, case closed. There are builders right now paying more for properties than people are willing to pay when they step in and say, "Wow, this thing has a bad foundation. This thing is still in oil. This has a bad roof. There's a lot of work to do here." So while many homes I like to see restored, some can't be, right? So when you need us, if you have a piece of property, if you have an old home, it has a bad leaky roof, lots of deferred maintenance, call us. Because sometimes the best thing to do is to fix it up and bring it to market if you have the funds to do so. And sometimes the best thing to do is to create a new property and reimagine it. Because guess what? Here in Seattle, yeah, there's not a lot of property just laying around. So when you need us, whether it's wholesale, retail, investing, buying, selling, let's sit down. RonandDonSitDown.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. And I don't want to just sit here and grind on homelessness. I think we all understand the issue and the problem, or do we? Finally, the Supreme Court this week has taken up a case. I don't know if it's important to go into the case, but I will just say there's a small town in Oregon, and they're like, "Hey, you know what? We are going to write tickets, and in fact, we've been writing tickets for people that are sleeping out in the open. Some of these tickets are $250, $300, right? These tickets, incredible. And on top of that, if people continue to get tickets and sleep in our parks, we're going to throw them in jail. Where we're not going to throw them is in a bed, because we don't have a bed for them." So as a result of that, the Supreme Court has finally said, and they've been dodging this for a long time, they're like, "Okay, let's talk about encampments." Because you have people on both sides of the aisle, like Gavin Newsom in California is going, "Hey, if we don't have the tools to remove people from our parks, it is out of control here in California," which I think represents half of all the country's homelessness. They throw more money at it than anybody does. And a lot of times money is not the issue, and it's not the problem. So, and this is what we have to think about. And I think we've done ourselves a disservice by calling everyone homeless. And in fact, if you look here in the city of Seattle, the people that are sleeping in our parks, there are people that are sleeping in our parks that aren't homeless. They're criminals. They're effing criminals. That's what they are. And go to try to kick them out of that park. They will kill you. Don't do that. I've been run out of parks when my son and I went to try to go do some skateboarding. So mixed in with the homeless population are people that are complete addicts on their mind. And I'm sorry, if you're a heroin addict, you're an everything addict. On top of that, in order to get your heroin, now you have to become a criminal. So you have criminals, you have addicts, you have true homeless people, you have mental illness, you have domestic violence. And then on top of that, That's what we have brewing in our parks and in our neighborhoods, and now add a tent and allowing people to. And here's the rule, and this is the rule in Seattle: if we don't have a place to take you, where you can sleep for the night, then we have to allow you to continue to sleep in the park.
Well, and that's the crux of this, because in 2018 this was the landmark case.
No, and I understand. So let me finish. Here in Seattle, there are beds for people to sleep in. People just don't want to sleep in those beds, because with those beds, there's a contract and you have to sign the contract, and then there's things you can't do. So you can't do heroin, right? You can't sit there and bring your dog and your cat and your mom and your dad and your AR-15, and you can't bring that into these encampments. And as a result of that, even here in Seattle, where they've created some of these encampments and people to come and there's rules they have to follow, people sleep on the outside of those encampments because they like to use the laundry services on the inside. But a lot of times they don't end up using those. And so I don't think the Oregon, I don't think this is the right case that the Supreme Court should have taken up, because it's not the right case. What do you do, like here in Seattle, where there are places for you to go and you refuse to go? That's different than what the Supreme Court is looking at, because these people have no place to go. So people that are on the left are telling these attorneys they don't have any place to go. So why is it a crime for them to sleep in a park? And I think that's the crux and the problem with the Supreme Court taking on this case. It's like Roe versus Wade. That was the wrong case, and that's why it fell apart. This is the wrong case as well. What say you?
Well, it goes back to this 2018 Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the West Coast case, where it said that criminalizing, like, the act of camping outdoors was cruel and unusual punishment, and it violated the Eighth Amendment. And so that's the thing that I think made City of Seattle and all the cities on the West Coast go into like hyper steroid mode on homelessness, because it tied the hands of law enforcement. Law enforcement was basically told to stand down because of this ruling in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So Grants Pass, Oregon, has now taken that all the way to the Supreme Court. And here's the question at issue, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say, Don. Is the one side is saying that it should be illegal, as you just described. The other side is saying, and I hadn't thought of it in this way, you can't criminalize a status. You can criminalize an act, but you can't criminalize a status. So what they mean by that is, if you do not have a place to sleep tonight, you are homeless. That is your status. And so in the same way that they're saying it's the same way of gender or of race or of sexual identity, you that is who you happen to be right now.
You're saying the same thing, though. What they're not taking on is a case like here in Seattle.
I understand
where
that.
We're like, we can change your status. We have a place for you to stay.
I understand that.
And you have people here saying, I won't sleep in a shed, or I won't sleep in a tiny home, or I won't sleep next to them, or I'm not going to park my RV over there.
Or I'm not going to give up my drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, it's not about giving up your, it is about, do you have a place for people to stay? In Seattle, the answer is yes. In Oregon, the answer is no. So the cases are apples and oranges. I wish the Supreme Court was looking at a better case.
But here's the thing, though.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. But if this case gets overturned, what the mayor of Seattle could say, even with what you just described, is now this is now illegal. What this Ninth Circuit Court case said is that it's not illegal. That the cities cannot make it illegal for you to post up in the park and to pitch your tent and to sleep there.
What do you
if this case gets overturned, then we'll see what mayors will step up.
It's
going
to get overturned.
And they're going to say, hey, this is now illegal. So now a cop can come in, or a police officer or whatever, can say, this is illegal. And you have no recourse. And so now you are forcing them to change their status. You're forcing them to engage with homeless services, or whatever you want to call it, the homeless industrial complex. That, I think, is interesting. I think that people are fed up. And then I also want to explore a little bit for one second. Is it cruel and unusual punishment? I reread the Eighth Amendment just to kind of look at it in a second. And I think that's a really broad, loose application of the Eighth Amendment to try to say this is cruel and unusual punishment. It sure seems like that would be something that is for someone that's already incarcerated.
Yeah.
That's what cruel and unusual punishment is.
All right, you guys, more on the other side of this.
Hey Hey, it's Ron and Don here with Mitch Weeks. You know him better as Mitch.Loans. Mitch, you have a really cool new product for investors. I think it's kind of the first I've ever heard of it.
Yeah, so we have a great new investor cash flow program. And what this is we take the house you are buying and we inspect it, not you, the borrower. And so what we do is we look at the house and we say, will it cash flow? If you put 20% down, will it make more money than it's going to cost you to keep paying off your mortgage? And if it does, it's yours. It doesn't matter what you make on your own. It doesn't matter all these other things that we usually have to document. They don't matter. They're gone. It's just, does this house make sense? And if it does, you can buy it.
All right. So you can go up to four doors, up to four units on this. And Don and I have never heard of a product like this. It's pretty exciting if you've been wanting to get into the investment game. So go to Mitch.Loans right now. Set up a time to talk to Mitch. See if you qualify for this new program. That's Mitch.Loans.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. Let's talk about Seattle being torn down, because if you haven't been in the East Lake neighborhood lately, my son and I rode some bikes the other day. We actually went by the old radio station and past the old radio station where Cairo is on East Lake Avenue East. I was blown away how all the old grand homes up there in East Lake, they've all been torn down. I mean, they are gone. And it's just building after building after building of townhomes. And they all look the same. And on a gray day, because they're all kind of gray and brown. And it's pretty sad. What's interesting, though, is you're going up East Lake. As you look over to the right, there's this very bright yellow house. And I saw this house, and then I saw a for sale sign in front of this house. So I was kind of interested. So when I got home, I looked online. Charlie, sit. There you go. Good sit. So I looked online and come to find out that this house was built in 1893. Peter Steinbrück actually grew up in this house. Do you know who Peter Steinbrück is?
I heard the name. I don't place it off the top of my head.
He's an architect. He was also a city council member here in Seattle for a very long time. I think he's in his late 60s now. He was a kid, a grandkid that grew up in that house. And then he also ran for the mayor of Seattle and some other things. So I think he has an architecture firm here now. So anyway, when you walk in the house, there are period pieces in the house from when the house was born in 1893. I mean, it is really something the way that they preserved it and kept it. So I took a video of this house, this 1893 house, that was for sale for only $1 million. They tried selling it last year, I think, for $1.3 million. They couldn't find someone to buy it. The house, when you go inside, you can tell that there's some structural issues with it. And then on top of that, it's been named a landmark house. Because when you look around, you see all these townhomes and all this multifamily, you're like, what is this single family house with this incredible porch from 1893 and all the chandeliers and everything are still there? How's this old house, this grand house, this granddaddy of them all standing up in this neighborhood? And it's because they decided that this would be a landmark house. I would imagine with Peter's connections that he was probably able to do that. At the same time, they're selling the house is, hey, Peter Steinbrück is related and connected to this house. So I'm wondering why he's not stepping in and saving the house or refurbishing the house, right? And so I took a video of this. I put this online. So many people are interested in the house. We got to save that house. Don't tear that house down. Here's the hard thing, though, because I dug into it a little bit more. I talked to the realtor. And then I called somebody down at City Hall because I wanted to find out more about what it's like to own a landmark house. As far as the outside and the envelope of the house and even the color of the house, everything that you're going to do on the outside of the house has to go before a board. So the house is currently yellow, like a canary yellow. If you wanted to paint it green or you want to paint it a different shade of yellow, you would have to go before a board and they would decide what color you could paint the house. The stairs in front of the house are all falling down. There's this really cool wraparound deck that you have to be very careful. It all has to be redone. And then I think there's structural issues under the house where someone is going to have to get under there and probably jack that house up and retrofit and secure that house. That's just my opinion. That's what it looked like to me. You can't do any of that without going before the board. So it's like in the city of Seattle, once you have dealt with the city council here, once you have dealt with the mayor here, once you have dealt with the non-existent police department here, once you have dealt with the permitting department here, would you really want to buy a house like this and then have to go before the landmark board to decide whether you could replace that porch railing or not? And I think that's one of the reasons why the house is sitting, because who wants to take that on? You're going to have to throw a lot of money at this house to save the house, right? And it's on a hillside. So I don't know if this thing's been pile driven into the house or not. I don't know what you're going to have to do to secure it to the side of that hill. But then on top of that, you're not surrounded by a bunch of cute other houses. You're just surrounded. And I spun my camera around. You're just surrounded by it's you and this canary yellow house from 1893 that Peter Steinbeck grew up in, but evidently isn't a part of saving this house. And I don't know. I know that he's still alive. That's all I know. And maybe he doesn't have the money to do it. He's an architect, though. I find that kind of interesting. I looked at this and I said, you know, I think even. Because I even looked at that and thought, maybe I should go save that house. There's no effing way. There's just no way that I think anybody that has the ability to save that home. And the couple that bought it, they were in love. The realtor told me they were in love. They had this romantic idea and they were going to go in and restore it. This is kind of one of those houses where I think you could end up in a divorce. And that's exactly what happened. They're no longer together. They're selling the house. So anyway, did you see the pictures online? Did you see the house?
I did. And it's interesting to me. I like these historic houses as well. The city of Seattle just doesn't have enough of these designations to streamline anything. Like when you and I lived in New Orleans, if you're in the quarter where houses were built in the late 1700s, yeah. And then in the 1800s, there's a much easier process, but you still have to, you know, you can't buy a house from 1840 and then not use period correct colors or finishes on the outside if you needed to replace a gate or some wrought iron or what have you. Like, you do have to go before a review board, and I like that. But it's in a neighborhood where the whole neighborhood is that way. So you bring up a great point. When you're in the French Quarter, all of the buildings are from 1850. Yep. And so you walk down the whole neighborhood, and it makes sense that it's like, oh, well, we can't have a purple house in the middle of all of these other houses.
That's right.
And you can't have a modern gate when you have a bunch of gates that are all from 1840s. But in the Eastlake example, it's the only one standing. It reminds me of the up house that was over by the Ballard Commons, where it's the last house standing.
It's still there.
It wasn't historically significant before that happened, and then it was. What do you do in that case? I, the city of Seattle, as much as I love living here, and on a day like today when it's blue skies and it's just a beautiful place to be, they really, I wish they would take some time to think like a consumer, like to actually imagine themselves on the other side of the counter when it comes to getting a permit, when it comes to doing something like this house, when it comes to doing anything you have to do. I always tell the story, it's trivial, but to me it's you know, amplifies what it's like to be in Seattle. I did a kitchen remodel, you've seen it. I had all my outlets in there. We cut a small angle in the countertop so that you wouldn't bang your hip into the angle when you came out of the hallway. And the electrical inspector came in and he failed us. And he said, oh, that because of that you know, angle, you changed the countertop depth, you need to put in another outlet. And I was like, there's three outlets on this island. He's like, doesn't matter. It's not the code. And so he sat there and he made me bring back a Sparky, as they call it, an electrician. Cost me another couple $1,000s to add a fourth outlet box. Whereas it's clear. I did everything by the book with permits, license bonded guys. Like, it was by the book. And instead of coming in there and just going, hey, this looks really good, you guys did a great remodel, I'm signing off, just FYI, you know, that's not strictly to code. It's like 6 inches off where they made it. But like, that's the attitude they have. I have this power. I'm going to come in and I'm going to somehow get a power trip by making you do a thing that everybody in the room knew was not necessary. Yeah. But by the letter of the law, he did have that power and he was not going to sign off on it until he forced me to spend, you know, $2,500, $3,000 to bring the electrician back and put in another box. And it's like, dude, that's why people don't like you in Seattle.
Yeah,
because you have no common sense when it comes to what it's like to be a customer. And you know, you've been around long enough to know that I spent good money on this renovation, and now you're making me do this on the 1 yard line. It made me really angry, and my contractors and everybody else were standing around scratching their head, going, "Really? He called you out on that? Really?"
Yeah, and you have inspectors since COVID that won't come out to your house. I built a backyard cottage during COVID. I was cleared to cover, which means you can go ahead and put the walls up. And I put the walls up, and then all of a sudden, my person who was my electrical inspector was no longer with the city. And so I got a new inspector, and she said to me, she said, "Well, I need to see the grounding rods." And I said, "Well, I always showed the grounding rods to the other inspector. I have pictures of the grounding rods, and we're clear to cover." She goes, "I need to see the grounding rods." And I said, "Well, why don't you come out and see them?" Knowing that I had already covered and I couldn't show them to her, but she's like, "I don't have to come out and see them." She goes, "Turn your phone on and show me the grounding rods." So I'm like, okay. So I turned my phone on and I just showed her another pair of grounding rods that had nothing to do with the cottage that was grounded. And that's the way I passed that. But she's going to make me cut a hole in the wall to show her the grounding rods. And I'm like, wow, this is really inefficient. So I can't imagine. I cannot imagine taking on that house. I hope somebody does. And I hope they have great success with it. And I hope the inspectors are very kind to them. And I hope whoever the landmark board is, I mean, really, you have to go before a board to decide what color you're going to paint the house. That's incredible to me. Hey, you guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ron and Don Show. We really appreciate it. Thanks for making us your broadcasters, your friends, and for some of you, your real estate agents. And a lot of you have referred us to your friends, your parents, your loved ones, your neighbors, people in state, out of state. We greatly appreciate that.
You can stop referring me to the person trying to scam me and get me on WhatsApp and I do some scam thing that contacts me each and every week.
That's happening too. Anyway, if you need us, just reach out. All you have to do is go to ronandonsitdown.com. That's ronandonsitdown.com. And we can sit down today virtually. And then we won't even make you show us your grounding rods. That doesn't sound right. Yeah. That did not sound right. All right. Get signed up for the Nation News. Everything's at ronandon.com. Everything about the radio show, everything about our real estate business. And don't forget, we sell the sound. We are working in neighborhoods all over Seattle right now. Wait till you see what we're about to bring on. We can't wait to share it with you. Okay. Can we talk about ocean views and sound views? It's going to blow you away. If you need us, ronandonsitdown.com. Until next time, you keep your head up and your shoulders back. You've been listening to the Ron and Don Show only on the Ron and Don Radio Network.
Now keep your head up and your shoulders back and keep blowing that trumpet, and we'll see you next time.
Only
on the Ron and Don Radio Network.